And Ronnie, maybe we can switch back to you here. So, as you mentioned, this is not a new phenomenon. Glaciers are retreating and at a increased rate and leaving some pretty unstable slopes behind. So Barry Arm, particularly being as close as it is to Whittier, is the one we're all looking at the moment. But are there other areas of the Sound that are a concern where there could be a large landslide that might cause problems? Is there the research dollars and bandwidth among the scientific community to be monitoring those or, starting the monitoring process on other areas as well?
Yeah, when these things happen, we always think that we are far behind the curve because we suddenly realize that we don't know anything about many of these landscapes and let alone, how they change. And so currently, right now, there isn't a lot going on in terms of science. But there are a few volunteers basically that took it upon themselves to go through the satellite imagery to see what they can find. And it turns out that maybe not in Prince William Sounds, but other places around the southeast and even Kodiak, that there have been large events in the past, so landslides, and there's still evidence of that, and unstable slopes, and not just in the fjords, also in the mountains elsewhere, where you could imagine that a big landslide blocking a river, for instance, could turn into a mess pretty quickly. So there hasn't been enough research in this area for sure, but it is ramping up. So the new landslide bill from the federal government, it's going to provide funds for the USGS to do more research in Alaska. And Alaska is the legislature is debating funding for more research and particular more climate stations to provide that critical information about rain and snowmelt. And yeah, I think there is suddenly a lot more attention to this problem, and it has a lot of eyes turned around the world, I would say, of people that are willing to help and give their expertise. And so that's, I think, really nice to see that all these scientists come together and share their ideas. And yeah, and hopefully we'll get this figured out and mapped pretty quick.
Yeah, this certainly isn't the first time Alaska has been the center of some pretty interesting expansions in scientific knowledge. I mean, the Good Friday earthquake certainly advanced the scientific understanding of plate tectonics and how earthquakes work. And you look at the Alaska Volcano Observatory and all the work they've done in the state. Now it seems like Alaska is kind of at the forefront of new research and science in landslides. And on one hand, we're going to benefit from having that new information and that new understanding. But man, it'd sure be nice if we could get there without such a risk to human life. Ronnie, you had mentioned earlier that you were involved in studying the landslides in Haynes and Skagway. And if you want to talk about impacts, oh my goodness, those poor communities and what they've had to deal with. But as funding goes, I imagine there isn't just a ton sitting around to study things that haven't been issues at this point. So I don't know how you really get ahead of that curve until you unfortunately do have an incident like there was in Southeast for a couple different communities having to deal with that. Do you feel like, though, Ronnie, that there is an adequate amount of funding and resources to be looking into these things now that we're getting a better understanding of just how prevalent they might be, what a increasing risk they might be given changes to climate?
No, I think that's a short answer.
Unfortunate.
But if the monies that are currently on the way are coming, and we get more people in place, and we get more eyes looking at this, permanently, I think that is the key. I mean, having all those scientists around the world, you know, turn their heads and look at Alaska is really good, and it comes up with a lot of good ideas, but we need to follow through on this, because if we don't get permanent people here, and then we will never get a full handle on it. And an example of that is my response in Haines. And so I was basically overnight put on a boat, first on the airplane from Fairbanks to Juneau, and then we were going to go in a helicopter to Haines, but the weather was so bad, the helicopter couldn't make it. So we went on the ferry the next day, and I was put in the middle of a community that was screaming basically about, oh, we need to evacuate this, we need to evacuate that. And I was standing there and looking at this landscape, and luckily I had been in Haines before, and so I knew what it looked like under normal conditions. But when you stand in front of a creek that is kind of gushing, you know, running over the street, and you wonder, geez, how many times does that happen in a year, that this, you know, this amount of water is causing trouble like that? And so it's this normal that you're looking for everywhere you go. But this normal is changing, and it's changing with space, and it's changing in time with climate change. And so it's so much data to keep track of. And so I think it almost requires for every community to have a person that is aware of landslides, and so to just keep track of things that are normal. You know, what is a normal high flow event? I don't know. You know, if you haven't seen it before, it's just really hard to judge. And so anyway, so that's where I think we should go in the long term, but it will take a long road to get there, I think.
Right. And as Dave was talking about developing just baselines for these different regions and, you know, what's normal, what's not normal, what's the new normal, and then what's deviating from the new normal. So, Ronnie, you're saying it helps to have folks in these areas who can give some input into, well, I've lived here for 40, 50 years, and I can only remember a handful of times, or no, usually, you know, in April, that creek really gets running fast. Is there much of a role for local communities or folks who are familiar with an area? You know, you hear the term citizen scientist quite a bit as far as sort of group sharing, information gathering and monitoring. And you look at Barry Arm in particular, that risk was first noticed by Valisa Higman, who's an artist in Seldovia doing an artist in residency stint in Prince William Sound. And her brother Hig does landslide research. He's a geologist, and she looked at that and mentioned it to him, and that kicked off this whole thing. So is there a useful way that, you know, local residents of an area who might be at risk for some of these issues can participate or contribute to the research and the science that's going to need to develop here over the next however many years?
I think for sure, yes. Answer is yes there. And it goes to a very, I think, underappreciated part of science, which is the naturalist. These are just the people that observe nature. And I think it was a lot more common just 100 years ago because people were just observing. Now it's much more about how do I write a good hypothesis to test this theory? And people forget to look. People forget to look around, even scientists. We see this all the time. They just go to one place, they test their hypothesis, and then they go away again. And what do they really understand about the system? That is the question. And so I think anybody can make these observations. We just have to create a system that organizes that kind of data.
Okay, so there isn't currently some sort of I don't know what database in the works where people can submit observations?
We started in Haines, and it seemed to work pretty nicely. It was it's an app called Mountain Hub, and it's a hazard app, basically related to mountain hazards. And it comes from the avalanche hazard side, and it was modified to also include landslide hazards. But when you have these things, people tend to forget about this app, and especially when there's nothing going on, right? You have just normal rain, normal conditions, and people just go about their business. Nobody is observing anything. And so we will also need some sites that are monitoring remotely, like little robots, right, that just sit there and watch. That's what they are really good at. Humans get distracted. So a combination of all those things, I would say, having, you know, continuously operating sensors in place around communities that, you know, are at risk, and then also have the people observe things where there are no sensors, and combining those in some sort of a online world, which I can't even imagine yet, but I think it's possible.
Okay. Dave, how about you? Are there ways that you can think of that, you know, folks who are out in the Sound either live there or recreate there regularly? Is there anything useful they can kind of do to support the cause of alertness or monitoring for potential tsunami hazards?
Yeah, the monitoring is tricky, but, you know, just being aware of your surroundings, you know, being attuned to changes in the fjords that you like to, you know, recreate and fish in and be around, you know when things look different. And, you know, if you're looking at some old photos from mom or grandma and you pull them out and go, well, that looks different, you know, note that. You know, bring that forward to your community and to the science community for sure. But as far as the tsunami side of that goes, you know, just have a plan. Having a plan makes probably the most difference in how people survive catastrophic events like that. And that doesn't matter if it's tsunami, earthquake, fire, flood, it's all the same. Having a plan, practicing your plan, reminding your family and your community of what your plan is and doing that, that changes outcomes, right? So if you're going to be out on your boat, know where you are, know where you can go when you get an alert. Make sure that the ways that you can receive an alert work before you leave port. You know, when you're in Whittier, know where, you know, if you're at the fish and chips place, know how to get up the hill. And, you know, is there a train sitting across the tracks right now? Is that going to slow you down? Know what that means. And that's, you know, it's unfortunately, it's a heightened state of awareness and vigilance that you kind of have to have. But it changes outcomes, and that applies for any community in Prince William Sound when you're thinking about this risk or any other risk, is, you know, just know where you are, know how you're going to get some information, make sure you have two or three ways to get that information, and then know what you're going to do when you get that information and practice it, and it'll pay off.
And what are the best ways for getting that information? Obviously, it's different whether you're in Whittier versus you're out on a boat. I mean, Whittier has the sirens and, you know, local radio and cell phone service, and different if you're out on the water.
Right. And you know, Prince William Sound is unique in that regard. And there are some places in Prince William Sound that actually have okay cell service, right? So there is some hope that messages could be received in that way, but I would not use that as my first go-to method there. However, wireless emergency alerts may be possible on your carrier, and the Coast Guard radio, of course, the safety channel would be sharing that information as soon as they receive that. NOAA weather radio, if you have reception, will also be broadcasting that via the forecast office in Anchorage, you know, for communities that, you know, like Whittier and Valdez and everybody else, you can see that on social media if you have internet access at that point, whether it's on your phone or at home. So social media like Facebook will share that message that way. And Twitter has another functionality, and Facebook works the same way a little bit, but I think Twitter is probably where most people have found this to be a little more useful. If you subscribe to NWS_NTWC, using a little bell symbol on the Twitter account, it will give you a push notification on your phone. And that's important because for a while, folks were subscribing to alerts that way and getting the SMS or text messages from our system. And Twitter's discontinued that. So if you haven't seen those in a while, that's probably why. And you need to go in, create a Twitter account, sign up for that service, and then subscribe to that notification on the National Tsunami Warning Center account. And that'll be another way that you can get that message pretty quickly. It comes to me in a matter of seconds when we issue a message. It's pretty fast.
Okay. Let's see. As far as ways to find more information, the website, so DNR has just a great resource, the Geological and Geophysical Surveys Division, on Barry Arm, and there's status updates and there's reports on observations and the study work that's going on. Can you give folks maybe a virtual sort of tour of what all information is available to the public and how they can check that out?
Yeah, sure thing. So, There's two parts to this, and initially we stood up some initial information with DNR because it was a little bit more of a nimble operation from all the groups that were feeding information into the awareness process right away. But if you simply just Google or use your favorite search engine to type in Barry Arm landslide in Alaska, and you'll find it really quick. This is on the Department of Natural Resources Geological and Geophysical Surveys, so dggs.alaska.gov. And at the top, you're going to see a box that says status report. And the most recent update we have there is the March 12th update. In there is our most important information. And you're going to see any changes to the landslide, as well as maybe any monitoring efforts that are ongoing or starting up there. And any other news as it develops, I think will be kind of headlined in that box. So that's a good first place to start. The most important part of that box today is that the interagency science team reports no changes to the landslide that warrant a change in status for the past several months. The next little part down there is going to talk about maybe some more detailed ongoing efforts there. Perhaps if there's community talks or awareness opportunities, you'll see those listed out there. There's information that the city of Whittier performed some maintenance and tested their existing tsunami siren in the last week there, and they're also working on getting a second siren. So news like that will be found. Ongoing observations and new information for detection and any science news will be posted here. Ongoing preparedness efforts there, as well as additional, frequently asked questions, a lot of which we've talked about today are on the website, as well as a specific tsunami preparedness and ways to reach the team. If you want to reach out to the DGGS team or the interagency team, you can email barryarm@alaska.gov, and that message will get to the right people. And then we tell you when the next update's going to be found. The next update on this website will be March 26th, unless something changes, and it's important to get that out right away. A new thing that the folks at DNR and DGGS added to this website, which is really cool, is you can subscribe for website updates now. So we have been sharing that we're updating this website on, it's about a two-week cycle right now, with the communities around Prince William Sound. But as a public citizen, if you would like to be included in that notification, you can subscribe and the website will let you know that changes have been made and there's a new update for you to read. So I'd encourage folks to check that out. And you'll see that on the right side of the screen. If you click through the website, there's also additional information, the original academic paper there, the kind of the white paper that went out to got this process started. That initial information is there, as well as some of the information from Dr. Lynette and size comparisons to other important landslides that have happened around Alaska. All that information's there. Everything that we know at this point is really publicly available there. So I'd encourage people to dig around and see what they need. And if they have questions that develop after that, we're certainly available to help with that.
Yeah, it really is a wonderful resource. There's just a wealth of information on there. Would definitely recommend signing up to get the alerts and just having that bookmarked if you're planning on being in the sound. Spend some time, perhaps while you're waiting for the tunnel, just scroll through there, get yourself familiarized with what's going on and what's coming up. There's some great maps in there. It's just really useful history of the studies and what they're looking at in the future. So highly recommend checking that one out. Super useful if you're going to be anywhere in that area. And we are getting up to the top of the hour again, so I want to finish up with you guys. If you have any final thoughts, things we didn't mention that folks should be aware of, any thoughts going into the summer, spring season, as the Sound's going to be a little bit more of a happen in place. Dave, let's start with you. How would you like to conclude here today?
Sure. Well, you know, COVID aside, I think Whittier is going to be a pretty happening place this summer for science. I think you're going to see a lot of groups moving in and around Whittier Harbor and probably close to Barry Arm. You're also going to see a NOAA ship in the vicinity. I believe NOAA ship, I think Fairweather. I hope I got that right, because the other one, they'll let me know if I got it right. But I think Fairweather is going to be in Port Wells doing work. And that's not necessarily related to the Barry Arm concern. It's been planned for the survey to take place this summer for a long time, and we're glad that they're doing it. But any new information about the seafloor, especially in that area, and especially because of that concern, will help our understanding of how any wave will move around and add to that information flow for sure. But just so you know, it's not necessarily related to the Barry Arm, but a big white ship will be in Prince William Sound this summer. And yeah, after April, we'll be working really hard on getting that monitoring equipment installed and tuned in at the Tsunami Warning Center, so that we can be ready to alert Whittier and Prince William Sound of any changes in the water level as quickly as possible. So I'd always encourage people to make sure you have a way to get that information, whether it's social media, wireless emergency alert, NOAA weather radio. Those are some of the fastest, best, and most reliable ways to stay safe with any weather hazard, and certainly tsunami hazard in Alaska.
Great, thank you. And Ronnie, how about you? Do you have any final thoughts for us today as far as things people should be aware of if they're out in the Sound, or what's coming up for you guys this summer?
Yeah, I think Dave said it really well. Will be a lot of activities, a lot of helicopters too. So you may not hear all of them. We are likely going to fly out of Girdwood. But the other thing I would like to add to that is for anybody who is out and about, is like Dave said earlier, is just to be aware where you are. Think about the landscape. Think about, do you really want to pitch your tent here tonight? And not because of these very big things that could happen, big waves, big landslides, but also the small things. Your backyard might fall apart because it starts raining like crazy. It can be those kind of things. Just observe and be one with nature. I think everybody will enjoy themselves even more than they would otherwise.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much for making time to talk today. I really appreciate it. I know you both are crazy busy. It's not like Barry Arm is the only thing on either of your plates, I'm sure. So thank you so much for being here and sharing your time today.
Sure thing, Jenny. Glad to do it.
That was Ronnie Donnan with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. And Dave Snyder, Tsunami Warning Coordinator with NOAA's National Tsunami Warning Center. As mentioned, you can find out more about the potential Barry Arm landslide at dggs.alaska.gov/hazards. Click on the link to Barry Arm landslide under the list of geologic hazards. I'm Jenny Nyman. This has been the Kenai Conversation on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, Kenai Soldotna, 91.9 FM. Thanks for tuning in.